Small Biz America.
And welcome back to Small Biz America. Hope you had a great week in your business. Here with you on the Biz Talk Radio Network, I am, of course, David Wolf. If your business is in need of capital, I wanted to let you know we can help. Be sure to visit smallbizamerica.com and click on the business finance in the navigation. You'll fill out a short contact form and we can get the process rolling for business financing. We've got capital for your business at Small Biz America. If you'd like to host your own radio show on the Biz Talk Radio Network, we can help you do that. We know how to do that. Or a podcast, or both. So contact me at smallbizamericaradio.com. This week, we've got author, attorney, and expert in offshore asset protection planning, Howard Rosen. He'll be with us in just a little while. The author of Eliciting Excellence, Bringing Out the Best in People, Michael Beck, will be with us. We'll be talking, of course, about the people factor in your business. And then the Small Biz Brain with Gabe Arnold, as always. First up, Michael H., I hope I'll get the name right, Carew. Michael, help me here.
Carew.
He's a member of the Levine Jacobs and Company, LLC. They are a Livingston-based accounting and consulting firm qualified by the Superior Court of New Jersey, who are an authority on business valuation, specifically for closely held or family-owned businesses. Let's learn more about Michael's firm and how they help their clients. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you, David.
So there's a variety of talking points, subject matter that you are an expert on. So what I'd like to do for our audience, understanding that we are entrepreneurs, C-level executives of various, perhaps some mid-stage companies and also smaller entrepreneurial companies, what's top of the list for the work you do in terms of talking to an audience such as ours?
Well, not only do we talk to the business owner, we talk about their personal taxes as well. So trying to incorporate everything that affects the individual and the business.
Wow. So you're looking at the whole picture. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Some of the items that we look at now are the planning stages. Some of this deals with individuals, some deals with the business, and every business is just a little bit different.
Okay. So it's case by case. Let's take some of the notes that you sent in advance of this segment. I'd like to start with the last one on the list, review overall financial plan. So here we can talk about a personal balance sheet and a business balance sheet, personal set of financials. How do you like to approach or sort of enter this world with a client you're working with?
Yeah, this is actually one of the more difficult things. What happens with most people is they really have no understanding of what things mean on a balance sheet or on a profit and loss statement. And this is true not just for the entrepreneur, but for people who have been in business for numbers of years. So what we try to do is sit down and explain each area of the balance sheet, what it means, how it interacts with other parts of the financial statement.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, giving them a better understanding on how to manage their business.
Sure. Manage the business and, of course, the business of life. When you get into sort of the wills and insurance policies and sort of the life planning types of mechanisms that we have available to us as people and as business persons, what is it that people tend not to get right or not to understand fully about how to properly prepare these sorts of things?
Honestly, it's everything.
This is what you do. Yeah. Right.
When we start, now, obviously, I'm a CPA. I am not an attorney. We do not draft wills. We do not draft other legal documents. So we bring in other qualified professionals to handle that.
Yeah.
What we do with the client is analyze their financial position. So it starts with every kind of bank account, brokerage account, the insurance policies that are in effect, what's the purpose behind those insurance policies? Obviously, someone who's 35 years old with small children will have a greater insurance need than someone who's 75, who's nearing the end of their insurance need. So we look at at everything involved. You know, we'll look at what's necessary for potential college planning and how each one interacts with the other. With a will, there are significant taxes that are at stake if it's improperly prepared. So that's why I say you have the user has to use a competent counsel.
There is this interactivity between so many of these elements that is front and center for you as you sort of reframe and recontextualize. I imagine that many clients come to you and they haven't looked at their will or their insurance or even their balance sheet and income statement and how they interact for many, many years, right? I mean, you have to sort of refresh them.
Yeah. Absolutely. We tell people they should revisit their will every 3 years.
Wow.
As far as insurance policies, depending on the insurance agent,
mm-hmm.
that individual would know exactly what policies are in effect and can make recommendations as to improving them.
Yes.
Sometimes someone will use a term policy, others want a whole life policy, and there's different types. They may have to change beneficiaries. So things like that need to be revisited almost on an annual basis.
When you work with your clients, I'm guessing you're working on the whole client. And what I mean by that is their personal set of books and their business set of books. Is that a true statement in your practice?
Yes, of course.
All right. So it's all very interdynamic stuff that you're working on. Let's talk a little bit about tracking capital gains and losses. I mean, these are, again, there's tax implications around all of this, but what are some of the things that you think people, they're just blind spots for folks in terms of how they handle some of this?
Well, the first thing is the definition of a long term as compared to short term.
Sure.
Because it's in excess of a year and a day. It's a common mistake. I've seen stockbrokers make the same mistake, thinking that it's, you know, as long as it's over a year. So it's very important that it's more than a year and a day. The difference is considerable in tax mm-hmm. because there are tax savings due to lower rates for long-term gains than short-term gains. Short-term
right.
gains are taxed at your ordinary rate. Long-term gains have preferential rates.
Okay. Anything you want to talk about in terms of how the net gain is calculated. It has to do with the tax rate versus long and short. Do I have that right?
No, that's actually how the tax is calculated.
Okay.
What happens to calculate the gain is it's a multi-part calculation. You start by calculating all of the long-term gains, net that against long-term losses. Then you calculate the short-term gains, net that against the short-term losses.
I see.
Then you compare. If you have a total gain in both areas, then you'd report long-term and short-term gains. If you have a loss in one and a gain in the other, you would net the two. And wherever the excess falls, that's how it would get reported.
Interesting.
So for example, that's
the first time I've heard that explained so succinctly. Thank you.
Yeah, it's not overly difficult, but if it's not done accurately, you can wind up paying more than you have to.
Michael Carew is our guest. He's with Levine Jacobson Company. The website there is LJCPA.com. LJCPA.com. We got about a minute and a half before we close out this segment. Let's talk a little bit about charitable contributions. And you had a box around specifically non-cash.
Oh, absolutely. Most people overlook the opportunity to get deductions for non-cash contributions.
Mm-hmm.
There are several companies that make life very easy for you. Vietnam Vets, United War Veterans, Lupus Foundation, Big Brothers Big Sisters, Goodwill Industries. You know, several of these will come around and pick things up right from your house and leave you a receipt. The key is the receipt. So if you take, you know, excess clothing and bring it to one of the drop boxes at whatever strip mall, You don't have a receipt. You have no proof you made the contribution. Therefore, it's not deductible. So the advantage is bring it to either one of the locations, a Goodwill store or Salvation Army location, or have them pick it up. They all have 800 numbers. Makes it easy. The value is technically placed on it by the recipient. So if you don't have an exact calculation from them, at least know what you gave them, meaning, you know, 12 pairs of pants, 10 shirts, etc.
Yeah, be able to count and value it on some level. Michael H. Carew, CPA, from Levine Jacobs & Company, LLC, out of New Jersey. The website, again, is www.ljcpa.com. Michael, thanks for joining us on the program.
My pleasure. Thanks, David.
Be well. 17 past the hour.
Small Biz America.
David Beck with you here. David Wolf, that is, Beck with you, Small Biz America on Biz Talk Radio. Howard Rosen is an author, attorney, and expert in offshore asset protection planning. He's an AV-related attorney and CPA. We'll find out what that means. He was an adjunct professor and lecturer at law for 20 years at the University of Miami School of Law, and is frequently a guest speaker on programs like ours, plus the Bar Association and professional organizations, on the topic of asset protection planning, which is a complete mystery to me. So I'm just like my audience today. I know nothing about this. Howard, welcome to the program.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And I should mention your book is entitled Asset Protection, A Guide for Professionals. So what, if you start at the very top, what's the thing that most people, clients, readers of your book don't understand about asset protection planning, you know, at large, so to speak?
Well, a lot of people think that it may not be legal to do asset protection planning, and nothing could be further from the truth. If, and I underscore and italicize if it's done properly by an experienced professional.
When we talk about offshore asset protection, you're exactly right. What comes to mind is hiding assets nefariously and willfully in a bad way from their treatment of taxes against those assets, right?
So that's correct. Yeah.
So how do we approach this subject so we set it right for folks? Obviously, there's a lot that goes into this to structure it, right?
Correct. We make sure that our clients understand from the very first telephone call that our structures are tax neutral. And by that, we mean that their income tax picture in the United States does not change as a result of implementing this type of planning. Whatever they were paying tax on before, they will continue to pay tax on with our structure. So if they balk when we tell them that, they're probably not going to become a client of ours, because that's not what we're not looking to get in trouble or get anybody in trouble. So, you know, we make sure that our clients understand this is fully tax compliant with the United States tax laws.
For the purposes of illustration, could you illustrate a scenario whereby you would be able to implement a plan for legal and ethical taxation or asset protection, I should say?
Well, we have a variety of clients who come to us for a variety of reasons. Very often it's a business person, and the smart one will maybe see that one of his or her friends was sued and lost everything in a lawsuit and realized that it could happen to them. So they come to us and we establish an offshore trust, because trusts have been used in our legal system for about 1,000 years to protect assets. That part is not new. The way we do it today is, of course, different than it was 1,000 years ago. So they come to us and we set up an asset protection trust. We utilize a jurisdiction which has laws which are very favorable to the protection of assets in those trusts.
Okay. So you structure it. The trust is the legal entity, in other words, that's formed.
The core.
Okay.
That's the core.
Go ahead. You were going to continue, please.
Yeah. And that trust will usually also contain, in fact, always also contain, the client's core estate planning provisions, such as What happens when they die? Does it go to the children? Does it go to charities, the spouse, what have you? The normal estate planning provisions would be included in the asset protection trust. In addition, typically the trust is set up in the Cook Islands, which is a country in the South Pacific, which has very, very favorable asset protection trust laws. But the trust will open and hold its financial accounts, cash and securities, usually in a Swiss financial institution that's been around for a couple of hundred years. That's the big picture.
That's amazing. For those of us who are not familiar with these structures, it's a lot to take in. What happens in terms of the jurisdiction? Is this a benefit to them?
To the Cook Islands,
Cook Islands in this instance, yeah.
Yeah, this business, this offshore trust business, started in the Cook Islands in 1984 and today probably represents about 11% of their gross national product for that little country. And by little, I mean the total population might be 14, 15,000 people spread out over 15 islands in the South Pacific.
How fascinating.
But let me say this, Dave. I've been doing trusts for the entire time I've been a lawyer, which is 42 years, and for the last 25 years, I've only been doing Cook Islands trusts. But I will tell you that in all of my years of doing trusts, I've never dealt with more professional, responsible, and responsive trustee companies than the ones in the Cook Islands, bar none.
That's remarkable. Howard, as you structure these and work with clients, are the assets typically, how do I ask the question, are they cash generating assets or are they more static in nature? Give us examples of some of the types of assets that go into these trusts, if that's possible to do.
Sure. Well, you know, speaking about liquid assets, which is cash and marketable securities, the client's trust can hold anything from just cash, or it can have U.S. securities, just like you and I might have it at our local brokerage firm. It can have foreign securities, which you can't buy in the United States except through American depository receipts, which is it's not an economically feasible way to buy foreign securities. So you can actually gain an advantage investment-wise by using the offshore trust. Typically, the offshore trust can hold gold bullion in a vault in an account in the name of the trust. So the investment horizon is much broader than what you as a U.S. resident could obtain.
Okay, that's fascinating. Very, very interesting subject, and it obviously runs very deep. You are the experts in the field, and I should say the website is www.protectyou.com. You can also reach Howard's firm at 800-417-7134, 417-7134. As we wind up this segment, we got about a minute left or so. Howard, anything else that we didn't cover on this short sort of teaser segment about asset protection that you'd like to highlight?
Sure. I'll throw in real quick that to protect real estate, we've developed ancillary strategies where we strip out the equity from the real estate. We have lenders offshore, which loan our clients about 95% of the equity in the real estate. And the loan money then goes into the client's offshore trust. And the real estate left here in the United States is, as they say, mortgaged to the hilt and thus not attractive to a creditor. That's the best way you can protect real estate.
Wow. That's fascinating right there. So interesting. Howard Rosen has been our guest. The website protectyou.com. Great to have you on the program. There's lots to learn here. Contact them for more information. Again, it's www.protectyou.com or at 800-417-7134. Howard, we'll do it again. Thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you very much.
All right. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Coming up after the break, Michael Beck. He's an executive coach, business strategist, public speaker, and author. I love when I do that. Don't go away. 30 minutes past the hour.
It's time for another PR and SEO quick tip. with Melanie Rembrandt. So, Melanie, how do I build buzz for my business fast if I'm on a limited budget?
The best way to boost awareness for your business fast is through your website and public relations. To start, review your website and ask yourself if it is easy to use and provides value to potential customers. If not, add copy and information pertinent to your customers' needs. Then make sure your site is optimized for the search engines so that potential customers can find you online. If your site isn't optimized, you may be missing out on potential sales that are going to the competition. Next, talk to specific media members who target your audience. Tell them about the unique qualities and benefits of your products and services, and offer your expertise for future stories. Your discussions may lead to a feature story in a major publication that gives you third-party credibility and free publicity. With a good website that offers value and a few published stories about your business, you'll have a good chance of seeing a quick increase in site visitors and sales.
Want to boost sales fast with public relations and search engine optimization? Listen to PR and SEO Quick Tips with Melanie Rembrandt and visit RembrandtWrites.com/radio for your free newsletter, exclusive tips, and more.
Small Biz.
Small Biz America.
On Biz Talk Radio Network, David Wolf back with you. Thanks for staying with us. We have Michael Beck. He's an executive coach, business strategist, public speaker, author of the book Eliciting Excellence, Bringing Out the Best in People. Michael joins us now on the line. Welcome to the program, Michael.
David, thanks for having me today.
You are very welcome. We're going to talk about what I'll call the people factor. What led you to write the book Eliciting Excellence? What events led to this?
Well, you know, I work quite a bit with executives on leadership and on strategy, and all the information I've read and studied about, you hear how important leadership is and how to be a better leader, but no one ever really talks about why leadership makes that difference. And so after lots of thinking, I came to the conclusion that great leaders bring out the best in people. It's what makes the difference between mediocre results and really exceptional results. And so I wrote the book.
When you work with...
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on you. There's a little delay. Go ahead, please.
No, I was simply saying that's why I wrote the book. You know, I think like many people, I ended up working for some poor leaders over the years. And so I've always been interested in helping people be better leaders, bring out the best in other people, and then it's a win-win all around.
At the core of the book and the work you do and how you think about developing leaders to really bring out the best in people, what are some of the key elements that people tend to not get about what makes a great leader? What does make a great leader?
So... You know, there's a lot of work that's been done over the years, but I think that the that old saying that people join companies but they quit bosses kind of sums it up. That, you know, that the boss, the leader, does things to just mess things up. When if you've hired correctly, people are already engaged when they join the company. They're always thinking about making a difference and ways to do things better. And I think our job as leaders, firstly, is to avoid screwing that up. But I think because there are so many poor leaders and therefore we end up modeling people who are doing it poorly, it kind of proliferates. So, you know, you asked how does someone not be a good leader, and conversely, how do they become a good leader? I think that there are a couple of really key competencies, David, that really make a big difference. In my book, I talk about 15, but I think a few of the ones that really get the most mileage are having integrity. I'm not really talking about honesty here, but it's more about doing what you say you're going to do and being the kind of person that you say you are. And that goes a long way towards building trust and earning respect. And then the other two competencies that I think really are very impactful, and on the surface they seem kind of like no-brainers, like everyone does that, But in practice, I find many, many leaders actually don't do either one. And one of the two is what I call treating people like people instead of like things. And the other is to treat adults like adults instead of like children.
Fascinating. So really creating a foundation of trust and respect, and this integrity piece is so huge, because if you're not living your life with integrity, the company and the people that report to you, quote unquote, report to you, work for you, are not going to feel alignment and are not going to admire you and not going to feel like you're someone that wants to be followed. Do I have that right? I'm just sort of jamming with you here on this.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. A couple of things really to follow on with that, because you're spot on with this, and that people respond to a leader based on who they are, who that leader is. And by that, I mean how they're viewed as a person. You know, so you just a moment ago talked about respect and integrity and trust. If a leader doesn't have that, people will do what they are required to do, but not much more. And so there's a big difference between compliance and commitment. And if they're just going through the motions to keep their job, they're complying with what the requirements are. If they're really engaged, if they really are behind the leader, they're committed, and the results speak for themselves.
When you talk about a leader that you really want to do good work for, and of course you're serving the organization, they're serving the organization, that is a monumentally different experience than simply going through the motions, as you just put it, because you like and admire and you want to please them. It's this gut level in what you call engagement. That's engagement. That's I like this person. I want them to like me. I want to do good work for them. I want to serve the mission with them.
You are spot on.
There's
that's
a great question.
How it works.
Go ahead. There's a question you included in your work for the prep for me on this segment that says, when people are applying for a job and want to work for a great company, what questions should they ask in an interview that might shed light on the corporate culture vis-a-vis everything we're talking about here? So I'm being interviewed. What should I ask that's going to shed the light?
That's a really great question to dig into a little bit, because I find that cultural fit is generally much more important and much more impactful than knowledge and skill set fit. And so it really depends on, as the individual being interviewed, what matters to you that, as to what question you should ask. Does flexible work hours matter? Does work-life balance matter? Does, social interaction within the company, is that important to you? You need really to think about the things that really would make it a great workplace and ask about those things, the cultural things, not the technical aspects of the job.
Well, I love the way you put that. You want to ask them about what's important to you. And what that guides us to is, let's sit squarely in that chair or whatever the interview situation looks like and ask ourselves deeply, intuitively, what matters to me, what's going to turn me on being here, and then create a question around that so you can get a read on whether they care about what I care about. And that's brilliant. We got about a minute and a half left here as we close out. Gosh, these segments go fast. I should mention that your website is www.michaeljbeck.com. And you're an author. Are you all? What else are you doing in your professional life, Michael?
Well, I'm an executive strategist. So I work with executives on leadership effectiveness, on business strategy, on career strategy. And I've been doing it for about 16 years. I love what I do, and I love the people that I work with.
It's quite apparent that you do love this. This is about people. It is, again, the people factor. Quickly, if we can, and there's no quick answer for any of this stuff, if you encounter a leader in your world, here's the question. Can leaders be trained to be better leaders? Can they be awakened to the leader inside them?
Okay. So
and I got 20 seconds.
We have about half an hour, right?
Right.
So there's a big gap between the people that need it and the people that want it. If somebody wants to become a better leader, you can absolutely develop them. You can't. It's not training; it's development because it takes time, absolutely can be done. But if someone is blind to it or does not want to improve, there's pretty much no way to get it done.
There's no way to do it. Michael Beck, he is the author of Eliciting Excellence, just like the name suggests, bringing out the best in people. The website, www.michaeljbeck.com. Michael, thanks for joining us on Small Biz America.
Thanks so much, David.
Be well. After the break, it'll be the Small Biz Brain with Gabe Arnold. As always, 46 past the hour. Don't go away.
Small Biz America. The Brain.
And it's time for the Small Biz Brain. Joining us, as always, is the founder of CopywriterToday.net, an expert in email marketing automation sales, and, of course, our recurring guest here on Small Biz America, Gabe Arnold. Gabe, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, David. I'm glad to be here.
What's happening in your world, Copywriter.net? You have a growing enterprise yourself, don't you?
Yeah, we've been extremely busy. It's been a great summer so far, and things are picking up. We've got about 55 writers at the moment right now, all here in the States, and we expect by end of the year we may be at 100. Things are growing extremely fast, so no complaints.
So there's a tremendous demand, I should say, in the small business entrepreneurial ecosystem for the work you do. Why is it what is it that people miss about the importance of content marketing? And beyond that, what is it about your approach do you think that is helping you to scale this business so quickly?
So actually kind of the notes I wanted to share today were right in line with your question.
Of course.
You know, the important, the value of content is this, that in order to reach your audience, stay in front of your, you know, prospects, continue development with existing customers, you have to be somebody of value. So today I was going to share, like, hey, these are three things that I do to continue my success and growth and what I share with others. And the first is really, you know, be somebody of value, be a company of value, be somebody that is valuable in the eyes of your audience. And in order to do that, you really do need to share valuable information and tips and how-to guides and things like that. And so the one way, obviously, that you can do that is you can sit down and write all that yourself and create all that content yourself and do all the work, and that's completely fine if you have the time and ability and desire to do that. But if you don't, then that's where our service really comes into play, and that's where the demand comes from. People realize that they do need to stay in front of their audience with that content on their blog or through their email marketing or through social media, and so we're able to really dive into that customer's niche and then create content for them.
And there really is a certain amount of how would I say this, mining for the appropriate content when a business owner is outsourcing to your writers. That's a delicate and dynamic endeavor to speak as though you're them, or to create content that comes from a platform that they're comfortable with. Not easily done, right?
Yeah, and you know, that's something that people are always concerned about, and you're right. But in finding, like, the voice of the company and of the owner and who we're kind of writing on their behalf and helping them create that content, one of the things that we always do is, you know, have a kickoff call, run through things, read through their old material or research in their industry. We have a very specific and thorough process that we go through so that we can really be, you know, a voice on your behalf. And you're exactly right. And people are nervous about that. And that's why all of our writers here are based in the United States, so that we can, you know, get on a call together with you. They can ask questions. You can work with any of our account managers, and it's really it makes it easy to communicate and be on the same page and get through kind of like that assimilation process of us learning about their business.
We're visiting with Gabe Arnold. He's the founder of CopywriterToday.net. The company provides email marketing, content marketing, a variety of technology solutions, he said, to businesses at large. As you scale this business of yours up, Gabe, our listeners may be asking, what's the biggest challenge that you've faced as you scale? In other words, when you talk about a world, an ecosystem of 55 individuals creating written material for you, how do you scale that?
The biggest challenge probably initially was like really having a seamless onboarding process where, you know, I could, you know, recruit a writer, hire them and take them through a process of the training that they go through with me and then working with my managers and then creating this virtual environment, even though we all work remotely and we all work from home. So refining that process took some time, but, you know, I've worked on that and automated parts and made, you know, there's certain touch points. And then the other part that's been a big, you know, kind of improvement with that is we use a new startup actually called Rocket Chat. And my entire team is in, you know, on this chat program. And so we all chat in, you know, different rooms in there or one-on-one. And so, you know, that way we feel like we're in the same room. And then we also obviously do team calls and things like that.
Yeah.
But initially it definitely was a challenge to recruit fast enough. But that, you know, over time we kind of found a process that was, you know,
yeah,
successful and fast enough to match our growth.
As we wind up this segment for today, as you onboard people, what was the, I guess there is a demand for this virtual worker, right? This flowing in and out project-based kind of scenario, right? This is a growing population. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I definitely think there's more opportunity for the folks to be able to work from home and be, you know, and do really well with it. I mean, our writers stay very busy and make very good money, and they get to do so, you know, without having to commute anywhere. And so it's for those that haven't worked virtually as the end kind of contractor or employee, it's a little bit of a mindset shift to kind of self-manage. And then for the company that you're working for or for the client, it's a little bit of a difference of realizing, you know, in today's world, we really don't have to see each other's face to accomplish the work that we want to do together. So there's a
right.
little bit of a mindset shift that definitely has to occur too.
Yeah, and some of that's generational, and we both understand what that means as well. Gabe Arnold, copywritertoday.net, 888-618-9123, offering a whole lot to the business owner of the future. And he is of the future as well. Gabe, thanks as always. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Mark Twain said, 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you didn't do than by the ones that you did do. So throw off the bowlines, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your own sails, explore, dream, and discover. That's from Mark Twain. So brilliant, so inspiring. And, you know, we're here to inspire you. It takes intellectual capital. It takes emotional capital. And, of course, it takes financial capital. I want to remind you that you can go out to smallbizamerica.com and click on the business financing navigation, and it'll take you to a short application. If you are looking for a business loan for your small business, we can help. We also deal with larger structures and partners beyond just business loans. So go to smallbizamerica.com and click on business financing today. You can always listen to our show archives on iTunes if you want to re-listen or share any of the programming that we generate here. If you want to have your own show on the BizTalk Radio Network, on terrestrial or on podcasting, we know how to help you do that. So give me a shout through my website at smallbizamerica.com. Or smallbizamericaradio.com as an easy way to do that. And you can hear the archives from there as well. Have a great week in your business. We'll see you next time on Small Biz America.